It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
I watched every minute of the Stormy Daniels testimony yesterday. I guess it'd be more accurate to say I watched reporters giving me their accounts from inside the Manhattan courthouse. And there's so many layers to this that it's the natural lead. I'm going to save some of the lighter stuff for the end of the podcast. So story number one, there was a lot of detail put out by, I guess we now say, the adult film actress. And with that detail, I think it was pretty convincing that she had had this encounter with Donald Trump, which he denies. But there was a lot of things in her testimony that were not helpful to her. It was a very mixed bag. So one thing she did is to talk in detail about how she met Trump at a golf tournament at Lake Tahoe. And then she happened to bump into him in the gift shop, and then the bodyguard said, "Would you like to join Trump for dinner?" And she said, "F no." She literally said, "F no," as opposed to the full word. Nevertheless, he persisted. She came. He was wearing silk pajamas. This was the Hugh Hefner moment. She told him to change. By the way, hanging over all this is how the jury reacted to her. She told a number of jokes as if she was on some, you know, late night show. There was no laughter. Now, was that because the jury was trying not to laugh or just did not find her funny? I don't know. But she said, there's mixed views on this. Stormy Daniels said, in my reading, that Trump did nothing to pressure her. But others are reading it a different way. I'll get to that. Here's the thing to remember. It's not illegal to have sex with a porn star or anybody else, even if you're married. It's not illegal to sign an NDA and have that other person sign an NDA. The crime that's being charged here has to do with falsified business expenses. And so everything else, I think, was both to hear from the woman at the heart of the case and also to just make Donald Trump appear as if, you know, his motivation was he only wanted to have sex. And by the way, the jury may think, especially when she got tripped up on cross-examination by the Trump defense team, that she's kind of a gold digger. She's an acknowledged liar, as came out both in the direct and cross-examination testimony. Or that Donald Trump is so wealthy that there was, as Stormy put it, an imbalance of power between them. Now, she did say, remember, she's under oath and under subpoena, in exchange for this $130,000 payment. And by the way, there's no factual dispute about this. Michael Cohen sent her the money. He eventually got reimbursed. She signed a non-disclosure agreement that required her to lie. She said this early in her testimony. "I could not tell my story. He could not tell his story. We had to pretend we didn't know each other." Okay, so she's now an acknowledged liar because that was the only way she was going to get the money. And remember, this was in the closing days of the 2016 campaign over something that had happened one time, she says, back in 2006. And so it was the bodyguard, as I mentioned yesterday, Keith Schiller, who persuaded Stormy Daniels to come to dinner with Donald Trump. She described the room at Tahoe in detail, beautiful, heavy furniture, all in an attempt to the color of the tile to show, to prove that she had been there. What did they talk about for 2 hours? He asked about her family. By the way, she said, and then this the judge did not want her to keep bringing this up, my mother was very neglectful, disappearing for days at a time. Therefore, she left home at 17, and that might have been why she first got into exotic dancing, then nude modeling, and ultimately adult films. How did she get paid? Were there STD tests? She told Trump she was tested every month, never tested positive. There was the brief conversation about Melania. We don't sleep in the same room, the future president said. And she snapped at Trump, at least according to her own account, when he showed her a business magazine with him as the cover boy. Are you always this rude? Are you always this arrogant and pompous? You don't even know how to have a conversation. Someone should spank you with that. And in fact, she did spank him with the magazine, but playfully. So does that, you know, it all depends on how you look at it. Be easier for those of us who are not inside the courtroom to describe her tone and so forth, but no cameras and no audio. He played the apprentice card. You should come on my show. And Stormy didn't buy it. She said NBC would never put on a porn star. Even you don't have that much power. There was the reference to Ivanka. Trump, you remind me of my daughter. Smart, blonde, and beautiful. People always underestimate her. Okay, so they were drinking a lot of water. She had to go to the bathroom. You have to cross the bedroom of this layout to get to the bathroom. She said she was not proud, but she went through his toiletry bag. Described what was in it. When she came out, there he was on the bed, wearing boxers and a t-shirt. And she lifted her leg and to describe the pose. And this is where she got really dramatic. I felt the room spin and blood leave my hands. How had she misread the situation? And I'm going to myself, yeah, someone who has had sex with, what, hundreds of men for pay, had no idea that this guy who greeted her in velvet pajamas might have something more in mind than a friendly chat. Just saying. She blacked out, but there were no drugs. And this is where the imbalance of power comes in. He was bigger and blocking the way. So many pundits jumped on that. Aha, it's intimidating. But I was not threatened, verbally or physically. And then she never quite explained how she went from the room was spinning, the blood was leaving her hands, and then I had my clothes off and my shoes off. I removed my bra. They were in the missionary position. The judge did not like that. It was the first of several defense objections that he sustained. Judge Merchan seemed uncomfortable. Since it's my duty to report on this, she said the action was brief, that Trump didn't use a condom, and she didn't enjoy it. But this is where it gets more complicated. And to me, this is crucial. Again, this is 2006. 2007, she sought him out. She wanted to maintain a relationship with him. Now, she felt that she had been intimidated into sex or treated roughly or lied to. Why would she do that? Well, she said it was because this notion of an appearance on The Apprentice that he had floated was still up in the air. So she saw him in the spring when he was launching a vodka product. She saw him that summer in L.A., went to his hotel bungalow with her boyfriend stationed outside. He kept trying to make sexual advances, said Stormy, putting his hand on her leg. She lied. Said she was having her period. Later on, Trump called, said he'd been overruled and couldn't get her on the show, just as she had predicted. The next significant event is in a parking lot in 2011. Stormy's out there with her young daughter, and an unknown man shows up. And she said this before, threatened her that if she ever revealed the encounter with Trump, bad things would happen. Now, of course, the fact that she doesn't know his name makes the account just impossible to fact check. And in fact, she was asked on cross, did you make this up? She said, no, this absolutely happened. Then we get to the final stretch of the 2016 campaign. She, after the Access Hollywood tape, caused a crescendo of journalists seeking her out, was approached by the Trump people about the $130,000 payment. She was told, look, it's better this way. Your husband won't find out. She kept saying she wasn't interested in money. Money was not my motivation. Yeah, but she took the six figures. I guess she said it was about $96,000 after, you know, the lawyers took their cut. Then we go to 2018. Wall Street Journal. Trump's president. Wall Street Journal exposes the hush money scheme, the involvement with Stormy Daniels, the NDA, and all of that. She says her life turned into chaos. People were camped out on her lawn. She was ostracized. But then when we got to cross, this is where I thought she really mishandled it. Now, of course, she had to be careful and not perjure herself. Trump had called her horse face and a sleazebag. And she called him a lot of names in return. Orange turd stuck in my mind. Do you hate Trump? Now, she could have said, look, I don't hate anybody with the benefit of time. I wasn't pleased with it, blah, blah, blah. Instead, she said, yeah, I hate Trump. Do you want him to go to jail if he's convicted? Absolutely. So now she's got an obvious act to grind. She's still pissed off. She hates Trump. She wants him behind bars. And then Trump's attorney brought up a defamation suit that she filed against the former president, or was filed on her behalf by her now imprisoned lawyer, Michael Avenatti. But she lost the suit last year. She was ordered to pay $120,000 and another $121,000 in attorney's fees. On the witness stand, she vowed never to pay it. I don't care what happens, I'm never paying that. But the fact that she owes him a lot of money and that the suit failed, also not looking great for Stormy Daniels. So right after the lunch break, the Trump defense moved for a mistrial. Judge Juan Merchan rejected the request. No shock there. He said there were some things that would have been better left unsaid, but he said the defense also shares the responsibility because his lawyers could have objected more. And just to tie it up, earlier in the morning, prosecutors called a Random House executive just as a way of getting in some statements from Trump's books into the record. When somebody hurts you, you go after them as viciously and as violently as you can. All the women on The Apprentice flirted with me. And this perhaps more relevant to the alleged criminality here. When you sign a check yourself, you're seeing what's really going on inside your business. If people see your signature at the bottom of a check, they screw you less. And Trump testified that he signed all checks, or all checks over $10,000, whatever it was. His lawyer, Susan Nicholas, basically, according to the New York Times at least, painted Stormy as a lying opportunist. Implied that she had fabricated the account of being threatened by this unknown Trump supporter in a Las Vegas parking lot. She didn't tell the baby's father about that. Your daughter's life was in jeopardy and you did not tell her father, right? That didn't look good. And eventually they got to the payment from Michael Cohen. Daniels has leaned into her Trump-adjacent fame. This story says she sold merchandise, filmed a documentary, sat for high-profile interviews, and written a book that even included such details as Trump's genitalia. I have just been tormented for the last 5 years ago, she said in this documentary, for which she was paid $10,000 for the rights. And I'm still here. The Trump attorney said, you've made a lot of money off Donald Trump. And she said, Stormy said, yeah, it's cost me a lot of money too. Now, by the way, as the Washington Post points out, Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche, was called to a sidebar at the bench during a break where Judge Merchan said that Trump was cursing audibly and possibly intimidating Daniels. I understand your client is upset, Merchan said, but he is cursing audibly and he is shaking his head visually, and that's contemptuous. It has the potential to intimidate the witness, and the jury can see that. So Trump comes out after the trial is over for the day, resumes tomorrow. This was a very big day, a very revealing day. As you see, their case is totally falling apart. They have nothing on books and records, and even something that should bear very little relationship to the case. It's just a disaster for the DA. The whole case is just a disaster. But what I found fascinating is that Trump also talked about some campaign issues. My recollection is not precise. You know, you're taking notes quickly, but I believe he talked about inflation and the campus protests, because these are his press conferences, and he's not just going to talk about, and you know, it gets a little repetitive, how he thinks there's really no case here. He gets to weigh in, how many people use it's another question, on other issues that people care about. Oh, and on Truth Social, he said, I spotted ratings-challenged Lawrence O'Donnell of MSDNC in the courthouse today. I haven't seen him in years. He looks like S, a real loser. Now, O'Donnell said that on his show on Friday, that Trump had stared him down with an intimidating and crazy face after they locked eyes. Okay, Andy McCarthy in National Review. What's become obvious is that the point of the trial is to bruise Donald Trump politically, to humiliate him with a tawdry sexual episode from nearly 20 years ago that is utterly unnecessary to prove the charges in the indictment, and to brand Trump a convicted felon so his Democratic opponent, President Biden, can refer to him that way in the campaign. All this stuff, rude, arrogant, pompous. She spanked him with a rolled-up magazine. One of the undercurrents, says McCarthy, how mocking and derisive Stormy Daniels is of Trump. Normal people will find the accounts of this spectacle nauseating. But the big concession Bragg made is that prosecutors would not ask Daniels to describe Trump's genitalia. I kid you not. And it goes on to say that the New York Times can't help itself but pile on with a couple of quotes here. Meanwhile, in the classified documents case, and this has drawn a storm, of criticism. This has nothing to do with Stormy. The judge appointed by Trump in Florida, a relatively inexperienced judge, Aileen Cannon, will not even set a date for this trial. She's raised the somewhat legitimate point that procedures have to be worked out to deal with how do you have a public trial with classified information. But having entered into a couple of delays, and the trial was supposed to start this month, but it wouldn't have anyway because the Brad case won't be done. There's no date. I mean, there's no way this will be heard, and maybe it wouldn't have been heard before the election. And she is widely seen as doing Trump's bidding. Maybe that's unfair, but she certainly didn't help herself or dispel the impression that she is trying to help Trump.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Story number two, President Biden giving that speech yesterday on Holocaust Days of Remembrance. And it was the only thing that was going to get the cable networks to break away from the Stormy testimony, which was actually at a kind of a sensitive spot. About a 15-minute speech, I'm just guessing. And I thought at first, well, they might still put up on a sidebar, you know, the words of the trial so people could still follow. But then I realized, I mean, here's Joe Biden talking about the killing of 6 million Jews, and you don't want to have a side panel that says we were in the missionary position. So a rare moment of tastefulness on the part of the networks. The president saying there is no place on any campus in America, after he went through the history of the Holocaust, any place in America for anti-Semitism, or hate speech, or threats of violence of any kind, whether against Jews or anyone else. We recommit to heading and heeding the lessons that one of the darkest chapters in human history, to revitalize and realize the responsibility of never again. This ancient hatred of Jews didn't begin with the Holocaust, didn't end with the Holocaust either, or even after our victory in World War II. This hatred continues to lie deep in the hearts of too many people in the world. That hatred was brought to life on October 7th. Now, here we are, not 75 years later, but just 7.5 months later, and people are already forgetting or already forgot that Hamas unleashed this terror. And there were other speakers, including the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and Hakeem Jeffries. And by the way, Joe Biden is supposed to talk to CNN's Erin Burnett tonight. Two quick observations. One, this is the first sit down he will have done in quite a while with a serious journalist. And secondly, it is no accident this is happening on a Wednesday, which is the one day each week when there's no Trump trial, in an effort to get more coverage. Meanwhile, as Politico and others report, Biden administration has paused a shipment of bombs that could be used in Rafah over concerns that Israel is poised to invade the southern Gaza city, where more than 1 million Palestinians are sheltering. These are 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 1,700 500-pound bombs. But no final decision has been made. I think this may be more symbolic than anything else, but clearly the Biden administration, again, is trying to get Israel to exercise some restraint. Meanwhile, Ukraine's security services said yesterday they'd foiled a Russian plot to assassinate Volodymyr Zelensky and other top military and political figures. Two Ukrainian colonels accused of participating in the plot have been arrested on suspicion of treason. And there have been other attempts or reported attempts. I mean, this is an ongoing effort. I mean, this guy has a target on his back for obvious reasons. So I wanted to share that with you. Story three, Marjorie Taylor Greene has backed off. The Georgia Congresswoman, who said this was the week, early this week, she was going to bring the motion to vacate. She was going to force a vote on whether Mike Johnson can keep his gavel. And a lot of us, and we talked about this on Media Buzz Sunday, were saying, why is she going through this? The Democrats have made clear that they will provide the necessary votes to table this motion and save the Republican speaker. But she held two long meetings with Johnson. Oh, now she says, well, we'll see. Right now the ball's in Mike Johnson's court. So in other words, she's not completely abandoning it, but she is. You don't bring things to a boil like this and then back off. I'm not saying they made a deal. I just think, why do this and draw all this criticism, even from people within your own Republican Party, if you're going to lose, if you're virtually certain to lose? Now, she said, we have to see progress hourly from the speaker. And asked whether it was fair to dangle the threat of a no-confidence vote over his head with no timeline. MTG said that their leaked list of four items was pretty specific. That includes defunding Jack Smith's investigation. Yeah, that would go over well. No more Ukraine aid. Well, they've already passed the bill. A deal on federal spending. Hard to do when you have the majority party controlling the Senate and the White House. And just a one-vote margin for now in your own house. And that future bills brought to the floor will be supported by a majority of House Republicans, which has not always been the case. Look, they all went through the Kevin McCarthy chaos. They don't want to do that again. McCarthy just kind of brushed it off, saying, I hear suggestions and ideas and thoughts from members. My door has been open from day one. Story four. This is a doozy of a story involving RFK Jr. and some good digging by the New York Times reporter Suzanne Craig. Back in 2010, RFK Jr. received a call from a doctor at New York Presbyterian Hospital telling him he appeared to have a dead parasite in his head. The doctor believed that abnormality that was seen on his scans was caused by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died. Now, the story goes on to say that he tries to appear, you know, just candidate of great vigor, snowboarding, lifting weights shirtless at Venice Beach. I don't know. Don't you think the American public would like to know that this senator's son, who was running for president, had part of his brain eaten? I mean, he says he has no ill effects from it now. I'm glad if that's true and he's all right. And it's very easy to make fun of, but are you kidding me? When I saw the headline, RFK Jr. says, you know, part of his, he had a dead worm in his brain. I thought he was disclosing it, but no, this was dug out by the Times. Also, he has suffered in the past from atrial fibrillation, AFib, common heart abnormality that increases the risk of stroke or heart failure. He has been hospitalized at least four times for these episodes, although he told the Times last winter this hadn't happened in more than a decade. He was also diagnosed with mercury poisoning, possibly from, or most likely from, eating too much fish, which can cause neurological issues. In this deposition from more than a decade ago, RFK Jr. saying, I have cognitive problems, clearly. I have short-term memory loss. I have longer-term memory loss that affects me. Couldn't this compromise his campaign? His spokeswoman said, that is a hilarious suggestion given the competition. I get it. Kennedy 70, Trump 77, Biden's 81. And it's not like they don't maybe have their own issues, but not a parasite in the brain that causes memory issues. They may have memory issues, but I mean, how, even people who like RFK, how can they just brush this off? How did he not disclose this?
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Story five. This is from Barry Weiss's Free Press. You know, there were more campus demonstrations. There have been arrests at University of Chicago. Columbia, I may have mentioned this yesterday, canceling its main graduation, which is a complete and total surrender to the pro-Hamas protesters. Instead, there will be 19 different graduations at different colleges, 17 or 19, I forget the exact number. 100 blocks north of the Manhattan campus. Anyway, the Free Press interviewed a guy named Mario Torres. He's a janitor at Columbia. He was in Hamilton Hall when the mob took it over. And there's a picture of him pulling down the hoodie of one of the occupiers, exposing his face. Remember, this is not a security guard. This is just a guy who cleans up. Turns out, the guy who he exposed and tried to stop is a 40-year-old trust fund kid named James Carlson, who owns a townhouse in Brooklyn for $2.3 million. That's how much it's worth. Mario Torres works at Columbia for 5 years, where the average janitor makes less than $19 an hour. And he said, look, they came through the elevators. They were rushing. They had a plan. It seemed like they had a plan. He looked up and noticed the cameras were covered. I thought this was definitely planned. He was trying to protect the building when he got into the altercation with Carlson, who had the Columbia hoodie on. Carlson has since been charged with 5 felonies, including burglary and reckless endangerment. I was freaking out, says Torres. At that point, I'm thinking about my family. How am I going to get out? Through the window? He was able to get to safety. He has not showed up for work since then. He's worried about losing his job. He's worried about his young family. How's he going to support them? Is Columbia going to retaliate and find a reason to fire me? So a spokesperson told the Free Press, Mr. Torres remains a valued member of the Columbia community. University policies prohibit retaliation against any employee who raises concerns in good faith. Meanwhile, I've been trying to get this in for... Well, let me go to this story first. The Indianapolis Star has suspended reporter Greg Doyle, who had that uncomfortable exchange, with Caitlin Clark when she was playing for Iowa. And it had to do with, it was a dumb joke. He had to do with him saying, well, when you make that gesture with your fingers over your heart, if you do that for me, you know, we're good. And he's been suspended for several days by the paper. And he's also, this is kind of like a restraining order, he can't go to any of the games of the WNBA team, the Indiana Fever. He can watch on TV and then write a column, but he essentially can't go anywhere near Clark, to whom he's apologized. And one of the reason for this is that it was discovered that he's had these awkward exchanges in the past with other female athletes. And finally, I've been trying to get this in. At Semaphore, co-founded by Ben Smith, the editor of the New York Times, Joe Kahn, who had been keeping a very low profile, was asked about the latest generation of college grads. And he says, we ask them to commit themselves to the idea of independent journalism. Ben, does that make it more likely to hire kids from state schools outside that elite group or kids who didn't go to college? Joe Kahn, I'd be open to it. But I don't think we can assume they've been trained for that if they've been trained for safe spaces. The newsroom is not a safe space. It's a space where you're being exposed to lots of journalism, some of which you're not going to like. And I think a lot of people in the early days of Trump took it as like, join us for the mission. That went too far, says Kahn. It was overly simplistic. And now we're trying to reestablish our norms. And this, I thought, was telling. Ben Smith, amid the coverage of Israel and Gaza, some people raised the subject of your father having been a pro-Israel activist. Kahn's father was on the board of the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting and Analysis, a pro-Israel media watchdog. Do you think that was anti-Semitic? Joe said, on any other issue, if you would raise doubts about the integrity of somebody based on their parent, the implication would be there's some sort of genetic reason why I'll be partial to Israel. So I think there's some implication of race. And I think it was unfair. My father did what he did. By the time I was in journalism, he wasn't active at all. So it was a little bit of an irrelevance. but it was a backhanded way of saying his father was Jewish. And I'm not an active Jew and don't share any of my father's agenda. I was a little uncomfortable with them suggesting that. Well, good for him. And thanks. I had to race through a lot of this. A couple things I still didn't get to, but I try to give you the cream of the crop. And we'll pick up with more tomorrow. See you then with more Buzz Meter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.